Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 19 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to be chatting that Lewis update. Market liked it. That stock's cheap. 7 PE, 7 dividend yield. And then RFG, previously Rhodes Food Group, the market did not like. We're talking with Ken Onyama. 10-cent results. Didn't like that either. And then we're going to be talking food price inflation. Are we watching that 70s show? Tholia Petosis from Alan Gray. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines, Stefanuti, Wilson Bailey and Avenge settle multi-million rand civil damages claim. Each will pay 31.5 million over the next 3 years for collusion and bid rigging on the Greenpoint Stadium project. It's about 130 million in total that they're paying. The city of Cape Town wanted closer to 470 odd million. So they've come out well ahead of it in terms of just what they're paying. Business Day, 91 sees huge growth opportunity in China. The CEO says COVID-19 slowed its plans, but the country is still one of the world's best asset management opportunities. I mean, it is, but it's tough there. Morning markets, sea of red, US red, S&P down 4%, worst day since June 2020. NASDAQ down 5.1%. Asia red, Sydney off 1.5%, Tokyo off 2.5%. Commodities, red with gold the exception, $1,821 for gold. Brent, $110.41 a barrel. Platinum, $919. Palladium, $2,018. Rand, $15.96. Top 40 opening call, about 700 points to the red. That's just over 1%. That is Tencent trades down 6.6% in the Hong Kong lunch break, albeit off the lows. It was off 8.5% earlier.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with now Sitembile Bopela, investment analyst at FNB Wealth and Investments. Sitembile, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned that Lewis trading update in the intro there. A strong update on a stock that trading at 5-year highs and totally recovered all of the pandemic collapses. And on the surface, looking cheap. I mean, a dividend yield of around 7%, historic price earnings also around 7%.
It does look quite attractive on a valuation perspective. And yeah, the results were very encouraging because, you know, management had kind of pointed to having a challenging second half because the company had come back from, you know, quite a hard lockdown base that was set previously. So we were kind of expecting a more challenging, second half. But you know, it was interesting to see the group still being able to deliver such, solid double-digit earnings growth, you know, on top of that. You know, they did mention that they'd entered Black Friday and the festive season with, you know, good stock position, which provided the company with a competitive advantage, during that season because, you know, supply chain issues that, you know, have been a challenge across the board. They were able to kind of weather that storm because of, you know, they were in a good position going into it. And, you know, we just expect that there will be further support driven by, you know, their targeted marketing and promotions, which, you know, they are focusing on going forward.
Yeah, and I take the point on that. It's so much about inventories at this moment with those supply constraints. RFG Group, previously Rhodes Food, their trading update. A lot of moving parts in there, but the biggest moving part was the market, which frankly just hated on it and thought they were really, really bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the face of it, the numbers did look positive, but I mean, once you read through to see the normalized, you know, headline earnings numbers, it was, you know, the expectation is more reflective of the group's actual performance, and that was a lot lower, and that's where they got punished. And so that's what the market was really paying attention to, but also paying attention to, you know, their site management cited, you know, significant cost inflation that they're expecting across several divisions of the group that they haven't been able to fully recover and likely won't be able to fully recover in the, at least not in the, in, you know, the very short term. And that's been the reality for a lot of, you know, consumer names. Inflation story, you know, and we're seeing it across the board. Even in an international context, you know, consumer goods players are struggling to pass through that inflation to consumers. And so they're surprising to the downside on a lot, on, you know, certain key metrics because of, you know, this kind of exceptional environment. So it's higher input costs that are really hurting consumer stocks. And Rhodes was not spared. You know, it's been the same theme across the sector.
Yeah, tough being a food producer right now. They're trading at all-time lows since they listed in 2014. Quick last question. MPC meeting later today. Expectation after, I mean, is it a 0.5% increase? Is that what you and your team are looking for?
So it's quite, it's quite an interesting one because, you know, even with the recent inflation numbers, which I think that's not going to change anything for the MPC right now. But, you know, headline inflation is already testing that upper band of the SARB's target band, which, you know, we do see inflation. It will continue to accelerate in the coming months. So it is going to put more pressure on, you know, the SARB to, the MPC to actually hike interest rates. So, I mean, it's a tough act to follow. The Fed, the UK central banks also hiking interest rates there. So there is quite a bit of pressure for, you know, interest rates in South Africa to also follow that same route.
Yeah, and I suppose part of the point is we actually can't get left too far behind in terms of where we are relative to the US. We'll leave that there. Zinto Bheli, Propeller Investment Analyst, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Kian Nanyana, independent analyst, talking Tencent results that came out yesterday. As I said, the stock is trading down 6.6% in Hong Kong. They're having their lunch break right now, so to stop trading. Kia, looking at the Tencent numbers, and I appreciate the stock's on a PE of only 13, which is not onerous, but they missed on almost everything. I mean, net income down, revenue below expectation, across the board, missed, and growth decelerating for a seventh straight quarter.
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. So I do not remember a time where Tencent, Alibaba, Pinduoduo have been at such low valuations, and I think it is testament to the times in which they operate and the regulatory environment they operate. I was listening to the CEO yesterday, and he was speaking about cautious expansion.
Yeah,
and that is the first time I've ever heard of such coming from a Chinese tech CEO.
Yeah, and I take your point on that. I mean, since 2004, I mean, they've been, when they were listed in 2004, they've been going absolutely crazy. I suppose they're learning to live within the new sort of Chinese environment, which is, we've seen all the tech crackdowns over the last couple of years, and they're very much adapting to it. But of course, that does then make them cautious and means they can't have that sort of conspicuous consumption and conspicuous wealth and profit generating.
I think, you know, listening to Pony Ma, one of the founders of Tencent, one thing that he did emphasize that this gives him a chance to shift gear to higher quality development. And I think the expansion will be more metered and will be more ruminative in terms of what kind of projects they want to put money in. Because to be perfectly honest, the gaming division has been one of the best generating cash flows in the business, and the online advertising as well. And I think right now it's one of those things where they now need to start valuing these projects a lot with a lot more keen eye than they have in the past, because free cash flows are just not out there to just be gotten with with any investment they make into the economy.
Yeah, and I mean, you've probably, as I have, run your eye down the list of things that they own, and it's pages and pages, and you know, everything from Epic Games, and they have a stake in it. It's kind of like they were doing lots of absolutely everything. Is this perhaps then a maturing of a business? And whilst we're not going to get the giant sort of growth that we've used to in the past, not necessarily a bad thing. They're a giant business. They're in a giant economy, 1.4 billion Chinese. And maturing, not necessarily the worst, or am I being slightly over-optimistic here?
I think it's an already mature business for the returns it's given shareholders, as well as the consistency in the past of those cash flows.
Mm.
I think right now it's just a phase in which they need to consolidate their balance sheet as well as their business in order to look more meticulously at the kind of businesses that they've put money in,
mm-hmm.
and start to operate in an environment where they do know that the regulatory changes are going to affect their bottom line. And In the past day, the Chinese government did say that they will support the tech sector. But one thing they need to be at the front of their mind is that this is a change in policy and not necessarily just a change in rhetoric from the government. So the government will change the policy.
Yeah, I take a point in that. So we've got Naspers trading at more than 5 years lows. We've got Process trading at all time lows since it listed a couple of years ago. Tencent is down, but I mean it was worse back in March. Is this something that you would be adding to a portfolio at this point, or is this still a let's rather watch and see how it shakes out?
For me at the moment, due to the fact that I always say that we can price for risk, we can't price for uncertainty.
Mm.
I call this sector uninvestable. I do not, I'm currently just looking, but I'm looking at the value across Tencent, Alibaba, Meituan, NetEase, and they're all looking great value. But for me at the moment, it's just stand and wait and see what happens with the Chinese government.
Yeah, I take that. It's fighting words, uninvestable, but I like your point there. We can price risk, we can't price uncertainty. Kia Nanyana, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles today. What's your take on Tencent? I mean, the glory days are certainly behind them. Can they get back to them? Is it perhaps just too risky, as Kia says there, uninvestable sector as a whole?
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Tholia Patusi, she from Allan Gray. Tholia, appreciate the early morning time. A great piece that you wrote that landed in my inbox earlier in the week. And food inflation, I'll be watching that 70s show. Of course, that was the last time when inflation globally was at the sort of levels we're seeing now. The thing with food inflation in particular, you make the point, it's a very powerful force because it touches every single person in the worst way. We have to eat. We have to pay up for food, even as prices are rising.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think something else that makes it so powerful is that when food becomes unaffordable, its impact is felt the most on low-income consumers. Mm-hmm. So the inflation basket that lower-income cohorts experience is very difficult to that high-income people experience. You know, and if you think about here in SA, you know, the inflation basket that Stats SA measures, you know, it's got a 20% weight towards rental and property prices, not something that everyone in the economy engages with, certainly not often. You know, you only buy or sell a home every few years, maybe you're not even a homeowner. But food inflation, as you've said, it's something that is so basically at the consumer level that everyone engages with very frequently. And I think that that's why it makes it a very important phenomenon, and in fact, a very important political phenomenon.
And if we add fuel to that, I mean, energy costs, even more so. Imagine, you know, the average low-income person spends proportionally a lot more on their of their salary right. on that. And you make the point around the impact it has. And we had an illustration where in the past, this in food inflation, I mean, particularly in emerging markets, I mean, you know, we can start seeing a political instability at the same point.
Exactly. So it was actually bread riots in Egypt that were the catalyst for sort of the clashes. I don't know if you remember the Arab Spring of 2011, mm-hmm. but that was sort of the catalyst. And if we fast forward to the present year, we're already starting to see discontent growing. And that's across quite a wide range of emerging markets. Sort of in India, there's been active protests this year amongst Indian labor unions. In Spain, there's been truck driver protests over the price of food and fuel. Sri Lanka is, they're in a severe state of emergency. They've had crop failures, they've had food shortages and civil unrest. So there is a food and fuel component tying together all of these. I have many more examples, by the way. So it's really, it becomes an intensely political phenomenon, and really it's resulted in riots, it's resulted in famine, in government regime changes. So I think it's something that everyone needs to be very well aware of.
Yeah, and it comes back to that key point. It hits hard, and it hits the poorest hardest. We're in a weird situation at the moment where our inflation came in at 5.9. We're actually quite well behind. I mean, the US is, what, 8.3, their last print. We're almost sort of, in a weird sense, I don't want to say winning the inflation war, but perhaps we're not losing as badly as other economies are at this point in time.
Yeah, so I like to make the point, sort of in the last 40 years or so, you know, South Africa's inflation has only lagged that of the US kind of a handful or so of times, and now we are living in one of those times. And really, my explanation for it, and again, I've heard a lot of explanations at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard, you know, stats they say need to measure inflation better. What I think it is we didn't have the fiscal headroom to support consumers to the degree that the U.S. did. So, I mean, they've rolled out these grand infrastructure spending programs. They've put stimulus checks literally directly in the hands of our consumers. You know, by comparison, you know, South Africa, okay, we did see the social relief distress grant last year, mm-hmm. that 350 rand per month. But cumulatively, you know, that's about 40 billion that was spent. I mean, it's less than 1% of GDP. You know, the U.S. spent a few trillion dollars. So in doing that, really what they stimulated is consumer spending. And that consumer spending comes through in inflation via demand-side inflation. So if you look at South Africa's core CPI, so strip out food and fuel, I think, you know, we're somewhere, you know, in March, I think we were at 3.8% year on year. So really, it points to the fact that our consumers are in a weak space.
And we're seeing the rate rises. We got the MPC later today. Expectation is 0.5%. We saw Powell do 0.5% in the last meeting. You make a great point in the article. You say, you know, people are referring, you know, sort of calling it Flock-esque in terms of what Paul Flockler did back in the 80s. Not even close. I mean, the US was up at 15-20% interest rates. They're now at 1%. I mean, they're still at exceedingly low rates in a high inflation environment.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly, that hits the nail on the head. So, I mean, the last time U.S. inflation was as high as it is today, their interest rates were 15%,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now they won. So you can't really tell me that, you know, their central bank is doing anything bold. And I think people who've made that statement are really overstating the point. I do think now that the Fed is raised by 50 basis points, I mean, it's a small step in the right direction, a tiny step.
Mm.
And I think that our Reserve Bank is sort of acutely aware of the risk to the rand, and I guess also its knock-on impact on inflation via imports if they do not at this point raise and follow, you know, even though they're obviously in a much trickier environment because our consumer is so much weaker, because our economy isn't necessarily running hot, you know, in all areas, you know, far from it.
Yeah. No, far from it. Last question, bringing it back to our local bond market. I mean, all of this then says to us, you know, almost certainly we're going to see a rise in bond yields. And that's going to be a global phenomenon. We're not going to be immune from that.
Correct, yeah. And in fact, it's already started to take place. So sort of in March, I think our our long bonds, kind of around the 20-year kind of region, was trading at about 10.5% yield, somewhere around there. They're now up above 11%. I think yesterday we got to like 11.10, 11.1%. So really, you know, this points to spillover that we're seeing from the Fed's tightening cycle, from that tension and nervousness in international bond markets into our own. So, I mean, U.S. bond yields have certainly been sort of mispriced for some time. I would argue perhaps even since 2008. Mm-hmm. But as that sort of sorts itself out, you know, investors are going to be either putting more money into U.S. bonds or just taking money out of bond funds as they see yields rising. Unfortunately, investors are often quite reactive. So really, it's going to point to tighter capital markets. It's going to point to the Federal Reserve sucking liquidity out of what are currently or what have been very cash flush markets. And that means that foreigners are likely to have less money to spend on our bonds. And unfortunately, we do really rely on their participation in our bond markets just because of the size of our fiscal deficit. You know, we need them to come in and to assist in funding our debt.
That's Thalia Pitirsi, she of Allan Gray. Really appreciate the excellent insights this morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Jimmy Moyoha yesterday, talking Pick and Pay numbers. They want to start challenging ShopRite. Our question to you is, who was your preferred JC listed food retailer? Most of you, more than half of you, myself included, said, nope, ShopRite, best of luck, Pick and Pay, but we're staying with ShopRite. About a fifth of you did take Pick and Pay, a tenth each then saying either Spar or none for you. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb website and the app 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabokhle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We've got Andreas van Heerden, Afrimat.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.